last time, you kind of let us know that you had a vote. And I remember hearing your tone change a little bit as you talked about Jackson Merrill and Paul Skeens. And after you got off, I told the guys, I was like, I still have a good feeling about Matt's vote here. I think it's going Skeens just based on the tone and tenor that he had. And sure enough, Paul Skeens. And listen, let's be fair about this. You weren't close to being the only one. 23 first place votes for Paul Skeens. So this was a pretty clear cut thing for most writers. My question for you, Matt, is what went into your thought process in terms of going with Skeens over Jackson Merrill?
Well, I didn't know that I was going to have to deal with this right now, so I have to go. Man, if you could read me that well, then I'm either was really terrible at hiding it, or you should be on like Survivor or something.
I do consider myself I'd be pretty good on Survivor, I must say. But
okay,
go ahead.
Cool. I thought it was, it's going to sound wishy-washy, I thought it was an incredibly difficult decision, and I have a column up where I kind of sorted it out. And generally speaking, I do go for position players over pitchers. I just thought Skeens was so dominant that he got a little bit of a bump up over Merrill there. And, I mean, look, Merrill was so clutch, and we talked about the six home runs that tied or won the game eighth inning or later. That was huge. I can't believe that he learned center field in spring training and did such a good job with it during the regular season, but he'd never played there before. I thought it was incredible. I wish that I would have had a slot for a position player and a pitcher, but it came down to it. I had to pick one, and I thought a sub-2 ERA from Skeens, all those double-digit strikeout games when he was held back early in the season, I thought he got enough workload, 133 innings, over 500 batters faced, that it got him into the ballpark with Merrill. And I thought once he was there, he was the more dominant player. And I still, when I sent it in, wasn't even sure about it. And I did think, and I included this in my column, one thought I had was, I think Skeens is going to win comfortably, and it should be closer than it's going to end up. But I don't think that I should vote based on Skeens should win, but it should be closer, so I'm going to vote for Merrill. It's like trying to figure out the rest of the voting body. I shouldn't do that. I think I should vote for who I thought was the best rookie. And I thought that Skeens was the more dominant and therefore best rookie. But again, it was incredibly close, and I thought that the vote should have been closer. But maybe it was a bunch of people who kind of were in the same boat with me. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll go with – I'm a Bears fan. I think that what happened on Sunday, if I said, hey, everybody tell me who won between the Bears and Packers, everybody would say the Packers. Just because 30 people said the Packers won doesn't mean it was a blowout. It was a very, very close game.
Right.
That's what I felt about this vote. It was very, very close, and just because a lot more people voted Skeens for first place doesn't mean that he blew Merrill out on the field.
I will say I think that's how it should be voted. I think you should be voting just as if you're the only one voting, and I think that's how you get your best answer down on the sheet of paper. Let me ask you this. If Merrill gets to 30 homers, do you think that changes the conversation, or was Paul Skeens so dominant? As you mentioned, under a 2 ERA, you just don't see that very often, especially from a guy who just got drafted last year. Or was that just too much dominance to overcome when it was all said and done?
Well, I mean, that one's tough because I don't get into whole numbers as much, like if it's 29 versus 30 home runs or something like that. But I mean, you're talking about six more home runs of production.
Right.
So,
which probably gets him over the 100.
He's probably pushing his average over 300, probably pushing the RBIs over 100.
Yeah.
That's a whole different resume there. And given that I said it was so close, maybe that would have put him over the top. It's hard for me to say exactly now because, like, I voted and I wrote the column before the playoffs even started, and it's been a long time since then. And I've been, like, thinking a lot more about the Hall of Fame now than the vote, but thinking about where I was and how close I thought it was, it wouldn't have been the round number as much as how much more overall production that would have meant that Merrill had. I think it probably would have been enough. Yeah.
We're talking to Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, here on 97.3 The Fan, and you've kind of taken all the wind out of my sails because I knew you were going to justify your points, and I knew that you were going to have numbers and you were going to have reasons for it and all of that. I guess I'm asking because I know everybody takes their vote seriously. I'm not asking if they're not taking the vote seriously. But is there any sort of criteria that they give you to vote upon? Or is it just who is the best player in your mind?
It's essentially who's the best player. Like, it's you're supposed to take certain things into account. I don't have it pulled up in front of me right now. But the basic gist is it is the best player as long as he's qualified as a rookie. And now, because there have been mistakes in the past, now there's a drop down.
Mm.
I forget, it was somebody on the Cubs got a really messed up vote, and it came out that the voter meant to put somebody else that had a name similar. So now we have a drop down box. You can't like just type in the name anymore. It's a drop down box.
that's right.
Yeah. But you know, other than that, it's like I said, I'd have to pull it up to find the specific wording, and there are instructions, but it is essentially just who's the best player in your mind. So it's open to interpretation in terms of how do you define the best player, or how do you measure a pitcher versus a position player. It's all kind of left up to the voter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Matt Snyder joins us here, CBS Sports. Matt, let's talk a little bit about this upcoming free agency. I would go into the manager, but Padres finished second in that one as well with Mike Schilt.
We're the best runner-up, Matt. We're the best runner-up out there.
Falling behind Murphy for the Brewers. But this free agency for the Padres doesn't seem as straightforward as last year. That's surprising, right? Because last year there was a ton of questions. You knew the Padres were tightening their belt. They were likely going to have to move Juan Soto, and they did that. And A.J. Preller did it as well as you could possibly do it. Now you fast forward to this year. Don't know as much in terms of what they're going to be spending, what they're not going to be spending. We do know that some contracts on the books are already scheduled for pay raises. They have an open left field spot. They currently have an open shortstop spot. They certainly have to get a starting pitcher to replace Joe Musgrove, who most likely will miss all of 2025. How do you see this one shaping out? Because I know last year when we talked to you, we knew going in that AJ had a lot of work to do. He might have as much work to do this year.
Man, that just the way that you painted that, it makes it all the more that much of a bummer that they didn't win either games four or games five in the NLDS. Because, like, man, the World Series is right there for the taking. I feel like Profar is going to be a high priority. Because it's such a good fit. He's comfortable there. He's coming off a career year. Maybe there's a hometown discount there. Not that he should give one, because this is going to be his one big payday.
Yeah.
But I feel like Profar is going to be some level of a priority there. It's hard to know what they're going to do money-wise, because it looks like it's a bit under $200 million right now, and you know they could probably go to $240 or $250. But in terms of the luxury tax, because of the way it's figured with all those future contracts, they're actually already over the luxury tax.
Yeah.
So are they just going to say, screw it, who cares, just do whatever? And I'm sure you guys have spoken about this a lot, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
In terms of pitching, the one-year Band-Aid for Musgrove, maybe you go for somebody with high upside, like a Nathan Eovaldi type. Again, it's so hard to know what the parameters are going to be on what they're looking to sign there. Shane Bieber, coming off Tommy John surgery, kind of a lottery ticket. I'm sure he won't be ready for the start of the year, but you know, middle of May, the Padres survived with a lot of injuries last year.
Yeah, they did.
And by the end of the year, Bieber could be a stud, and he's probably, like I said, looking for like a 1-year deal to rebuild his value after Tommy John surgery. So maybe that's the pool you're swimming in.
Walker Buehler may be in that pool
like
as well.
What's that?
I said Walker Buehler may be in that 100% one-year pool as well.
Walker Buehler's in there. I don't know if the Diamondbacks would do this, but if they're willing to eat almost all of Jordan Montgomery's money, you might as well just say, hey, we'll throw you something for Jordan Montgomery, because he's somebody else who's looking to rebuild his value. It's interesting to see. And again, if you're looking at the trade instead of free agency and Profar walks, maybe Brent Rooker, you don't know how much the A's are going to request for him. His payday's not going to shatter the payroll. It's going to be really interesting to see how things shake out. And another name to watch, as you mentioned, shortstop. Again, you're going with high risk, but you know, the Padres are comfortable here, right? Like, you're used to being in the high risk area. And if assuming the Blue Jays don't sign Juan Soto, which I don't think they're going to, they might as well start trading, right? And Bo Bichette is 1 year away from free agency. Mm. terrible, terrible last year, so he's not going to get the extension he wants from the Blue Jays. Maybe they won't get a ton for him. Hey, you might as well try Bo Bichette at shortstop for a year and see what you get. That would be another one in that same kind of ballpark where I might look.
We're talking to Matt Snyder here of CBS Sports. And last one for me, Matt. I'm going to go back a little bit to the voting. I wish I would have thought of this question earlier, but we've been talking on the show about how some of the awards, like all MLB, is voted upon by coaches and people that are in the dugout. Why do you think the awards that hold the most weight are the media-based voting awards?
That's just the way it started, I guess. Whenever way back when the awards started giving out by BBWAA, and then it just kind of became the thing that this is the MVP award and so on. Major League Baseball is doing the thing right now on MLB Network where they host that show that was last week, hosted by Roy Wood Jr., who was great, by the way. I wish people would sell his jokes more because he does a great job. They're starting to kind of push their own awards, like the All-MLB team and all that, but I still think these just hold the most weight because that's what everybody's used to.
Yeah.
They're used to talking about the Cy Young and the MVP award. I will say this. Maybe I'm biased because I am a writer. I still think we're the best suited to do it because the players during the season are playing. They're not paying attention to some of the stuff that I might be mentioning on the awards. And I'm sitting here, I'm the one that's sitting at a computer looking up all these stats and thinking about it all the time. They're thinking about playing. Coaches are game planning.
That's fair.
Managers are game planning. We're the ones that are thinking about it all the time. And I also think that we're probably pretty representative too. I know that people yell and scream about votes a lot of times, but usually if you take polls on the internet or wherever, it usually pretty well lines up with how the votes shake out.
I think that's fair. I for one, don't necessarily think the players would get it right all the time.
Coaches? You know,
I think coaches would do a better job. But as
Matt said, though, they don't.
The players and coaches are doing their job, so they aren't going to see everybody. They're just going to see highlights most of the time.
And the coaches and managers have voted on the Gold Gloves forever, and we've heard so much
that's
about
also
how bad
true.
The Gold
yeah.
Glove votes are. And one of my favorite ones is Rafael Palmeiro when he won the Gold Glove and he played like 19 games at first base. That's what you get when you have the coaches voting.
They just assumed he was out there for all the games.
Well, somebody did a study once that was like, all things being equal, usually the best offensive player would win Gold Glove.
100%.
Because the coaches 100%. Aren't used to scouting the defense as much as they're used to game planning against opposing, because you can't vote for your own players. So you only vote
correct.
For opposing players. They're used to game planning against the offense. They don't pay attention to the defense as much. You see Rafael Palmeiro on there, and you're like, oh, man, he must be a stud defender because he's so good at hitting. So, yeah.
All right, Matt, I got one more for you. I told you I was going to hold your feet to the fire, but this one isn't really on you or anything like that. Paul Skeens was also up for – he's also up for Cy Young, which is being given out tomorrow. Would that be egregious if he won the Cy Young Award, or do you think he's going to win the Cy Young Award?
No.
Okay.
That would be egregious.
The shortfall in workload is just way too much there because of how good Wheeler and Sale were both. He should finish third place, and I expect that he will. If he beat out Sale and Wheeler there, that would be atrocious. Because, like, on a rate basis, he was just as good as they were, right? But it's 133 innings versus...
That's right.
Wheeler was around 200. Sale was, what,
170-ish.
180?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of innings when you're similar to those guys.
Yeah.
So,
a lot
can
happen
no
in those innings,
that.
Too.
Yes, for 100%.
Sure. Matt, as always, man, I expected nothing but you standing on 10 toes after after your vote, and that's exactly what you did. We always appreciate you coming on and spending time with us, my man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Snyder, CBS Sport.